Hey there, it's Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett. Thank you for listening. I'm glad you're tuning in. This is going to be fascinating because if you've ever heard about the experiments they had with Cleve Baxter and singing plants, this is an hour going over that material and radionics. And my guest is the author of The Secret Art, A Brief History of Radionic Technology for the Creative Individual. Okay, this is going to give you the history, the background, how this all came into play, how it affects people. And my guest is the author, Duncan Laurie, and his website, you can check it out. There will be some instruments on there that kind of play this out for you and also give you more of the history. Duncan, you got some music that we're going to listen to too. Hi there. Thank you for connecting.
Hey. Yeah, nice to be on your show again. Thank you.
Okay, and we've got these are some examples of plants playing along with music. So how did this work? How did you set this up?
Well, this is a question of taking the tiny signals, the milliamp responses on the leaf of the plant, and translating them in first the voltages into pitch, and then assigning the pitch to an instrument. So what you're hearing is the plant literally responding to the music that's being played in the room by virtue of what's going on the surface of its leaf.
See, this is fascinating because when we get into this, and we're going to talk a little bit later about consciousness, do plants have consciousness? Do they think? Are they engaging with us? I believe full-heartedly that they are. This is going to be an interesting hour. Okay, this is the clip from the song, and this one happens to be the plant, a philodendron, playing along with Bob Dylan. So let's hear that. Okay. There you go. Duncan, do you want to explain that? How did that work?
Okay, well, you have Bob Dylan, he's playing the guitar. And what the sounds you hear in front are the electrodes, two electrodes attached to a leaf of a plant that are run through a piece of equipment that translates those voltages into pitch and then assigns them, in this case, to, I believe it was an electric organ. So what you're hearing is the plant's response to the music, and it doesn't track perfectly. What's odd about it is there's some delays, there's some incongruities to the experience that make it quite fascinating. It's not just the plant leaf vibrating. There's something within the plant that is actually producing a voltage response to the music.
Oh, see, for me, it's like, so is that plant jazz with the delay? It just has that very, it's eclectic, and you're right. It's like a beat off, but it's in there playing its own vibe. And so it's amazing to hear that and to think that there's something generating it that's bringing that to life. It's, my gosh, you know, it gives you, and I remember hearing this years ago with Cleve Baxter thinking, this is absolute, and Dominher, this is extraordinary to see that this is happening and there's something there that's conscious or sentient, something that says, hey, I'm going to play along. We have a couple of other clips. Are you ready? Do you want to talk about this next one before we play it or listen first?
Yeah, I believe this will be the slow clip. It was one of the first ones that we did. And you'll get a whole different sense of how the plant is responding to the music. Yeah, just go ahead and let's let the listeners hear some of this.
Okay.
That's the sensor by itself without any music.
Thank you.
this is, you get a real sense of what happens without any plant hooked up to it playing. Now it's segueing in to the music. There's no instrument here. This is just the pitch.
See, and that is just amazing. It's very spacey. You just, of course, that's because of what you're using to help the plant make its own sound. But that is just amazing. It's just mind-boggling.
Well, it's interesting to hear it without the instrument because you're just getting a pitch shift at the beginning, and the plant's moving the electricity on the plant is just going, and then all of a sudden the music starts and it tries to blend with it as it's being played.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you were hearing then.
Okay, and then we've got another clip. My thing is, so when people hear the word radionics, what does that mean when it's related to the music? How, you know, that's, it's still a foreign concept. What does this do?
All right. Well, first of all, what we're listening to is what radionics that I wrote about in the book is really a history of a type of technology. And it's very, very unusual in the sense that it's a self-referential technology where the artists invent their own equipment, which does their own, produces their own results, and they're all very different. But what we're hearing here is sort of what's called instrumental biocommunication. This is a word that has been coined to replace the term radionics, which has a much older history. And what people are trying to do now to present this material is tie it in with experimentations that are ongoing throughout the world. Mine are by no means the only group of people that are experimenting with this. And so when you think about this in terms of biocommunication, you're trying to access the intelligence or the sentience inside a plant, let's say. Mm-hmm. Does the plant really have the capacity to respond to me as an individual or a group in the room? And if so, what characterizes that other than just a mechanical response? So what I did was I enlisted the help of two people to make this, to create experiments along this line that began partially with Cleve Baxter's work, who, as you may know, connected lie detectors to plants, which is the same thing, to electrodes. And I visited him in his laboratory in San Diego and spent an afternoon with him and watched him do this. So I'm quite familiar with what he did. But he produced a graph. And on the graph, you could see responses, peaks and troughs, where the plant was responding in some way to touch, to voice command, to very many different things. What we did was just take this a little bit further and take the data that was on the graph and assign it a pitch. And from a pitch, we assigned it an instrument. And then later on, we orchestrated it. We assigned it an algorithm through various music software programs. So what you're hearing here, it began with myself having an interest in this as an artist, trying to understand and define for myself what is called subtle energy. Like, what mm-hmm. is the impulse that we bring to our art that makes it different than just frying an egg? So what I was curious about was there's something else going on. I could tell from myself, from my own experiences, when I began working. I would work to the point of exhaustion. I was all thumbs. Everything was not going right. And then all of a sudden, I hit a plateau, and everything became smooth. This was just before exhaustion, after a long work process, let's say carving stone. And everything got into harmony, into sync. And the chisel hit the stone correctly. There was just this other state that mm-hmm. became apparent through the work process. I'm sure athletes experience this. A lot of people do in their respective disciplines. So I got the help of a man named Gordon Salisbury, who was an electronics engineer and an instrument maker with a background in Navy, working with Navy intelligence on in warfare situations, did submarine detection, things like that, retired. And he was I was the dreamer and he was the assassin. So every time I had a notion about something that was a little flaky, he would just say, no, we can't take that we can't really go on that. We really have to test this assumption. And then that's why Gordon began developing instruments for us to use in this process. First, we used a rate of change converter. Then we used a Wheatstone bridge. And then we finally moved into a very complicated piece of brainwave analysis hardware software. So finally, to put all this together, we had another partner, Todd Phil, who managed to do the graphics for the book, help us put it all on the website, this sort of thing. So we had a team. And out of this came a number of recordings, a number of other experiences, and the book that you've been asking me about.
Yes, The Secret Heart.
So let's leave it there for a second. So,
okay. I also want to say, again, we're talking with Duncan Laurie, who's the author of The Secret Art, and this is a fascinating topic. My interest, because of all of this being consciousness and connecting as I do as an intuitive at a telepathic level, what I had was a response with a nightlight blinking and flickering and blinking and flickering, and I knew there was something else, not a plant, but something sentient, something that wanted to connect. And what it gave me in terms of what I do is it's a bioelectric response that in some way, shape, or form helps it connect through the electrical circuit, the nightlight. Now, I'm throwing this at you, Duncan. I didn't prepare you for this. But for me, to see that happen and to work with that has been incredibly extraordinary and fascinating and mystifying. And there are so many levels of this that our consciousness is just now beginning to fathom on another level, that we are working through these kinds of things, but we need instruments to show us a response. And that's what these radionic technologies, these little machines that you see with all the gadgets and the buttons and all of that, help us do. And Duncan, you're part of this because you're right there at the ground floor trying to explain this to people so they can maybe, you know, take it to the next level. And am I overreaching with that?
No, I don't think so. But I'd like you to explain your experience again, because I didn't quite understand it, what you were saying, what happened to you.
Okay. What happened, I lived in a place that had a lot of energy. And all of a sudden, I'm aware of my nightlights flickering when they're not supposed to. These are automatic on-off, daytime light off, nighttime light on. Instead, these lights are interactive, and I'm in the room, and they're popping and flickering when they should be off during the daytime. Or at night, they're going off. And so I learned how to, you know, connect and listen, that kind of thing, telepathic channeling. I went the whole nine yards to figure out how can I connect with this? And I had to really open up and become more intuitive. And of course that opened up to other things too. But the response, and it's been happening for 20 years, is a blinking, flickering nightlight that has an energy coming through it that isn't me, that is also saying that there's this other essence, this consciousness around us that connects through things such as plants, animals, any, you know, the stones. There's on your website, you're talking about, there's an experiment where they worked with stones. I think it was the Russians to help with post-traumatic stress. And they worked with Rocks, I think, is it what was, as I'm remembering off the cuff here.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I mean, I intended not to give
really...
I didn't want to give you a preview of this. I wanted you to, you know, be genuine and on the spot, react to that, because it's another element, I think, that goes with this of the person being a part of this. You are also, as you're experimenting with your plants, you are also impacting whether or not they want to respond. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, you're really talking about an overlay here. Something in your own consciousness was overlaying the lamp, your nightlight, and there was, you could determine or sense there's a feedback loop between you and the light. The light's flickering because you're in the room and you're perceiving it, and the more that you sense that light doing something, the more you respond, your emotions are aroused. And so it creates a feedback loop, and it improves the experience and makes it more tangible. And that's very much what happened to us with the plants. I mean, and it's not always a one-way street. For instance, we've had many, many times where we've tried to get the plants to have a response to a piece of music or to a person, and they just won't do it. I mean, there's just, they have their own rules. One of the things that's the most interesting about it is that if you don't approach them with a lot of ego, and you're feeling joyful and you're wanting to share and you're having fun like you would with your friends, then if they're hooked up when that's going on, then they want to join in. There's a simpatico. There's a sense that this is a part of life that we're willing to join. But if you approach them and you're just trying to make them do something mechanically to show off or something of that sort, then there's often the response is just completely no dice. So when we look at this from a radionic point of view, there's really two discussions. One is the discussion of the instruments that are used to sort of capture this experience, and they have evolved with time. And they are applied in different ways, mostly for healing and for augmentation in agriculture, replacing fertilizers and pesticides and things like that. You can use one of these radionic machines in place of a pesticide. So that's one discussion. Then the discussion that we started talking about here has to do with consciousness. So we have some clues now, thanks to our understanding of quantum mechanics and a lot of experimentation that's been going on really the last 20 or 30 years, it has to do with filling in the voids on the consciousness side. And how much you want to get into that technically, that's up to you. But I can go both directions with this. So you just let me know what interests you about this.
Well, we talked off the air, off the unrecorded about Dean Radin and his experiments with the intention experiment. And there are a lot of people. I mean, Lynn McTaggart, Masaru Emoto, and actually Emoto was in on this one through the IONS Institute of Noetic Sciences, the effects of distant intention on water crystal formation. But there's
perfect
also
example.
Mr. Tiller. Tiller also has done these experiments with intention, and I think part of it is to get an idea of how consciousness is, it's permeating everything, everywhere, all the time. And we're just now getting a clue. So maybe didn't narrow it down, did it? Start there.
Okay. Well, when you talk about Robert John, Brenda Dunn, and Roger Nelson, they were at Princeton and they started in the 1970s doing statistical analysis of the effect of consciousness on various systems. And especially this had to do with some experiments with this, with light and sort of a lot of just data acquisition about how consciousness can affect matter, which was a taboo subject and probably still is in many quarters. What Dr. Tiller did, who was a professor emeritus at Stanford in the Department of Material Science, was after he retired, after 34 years in academia, he got fascinated by things like radionics, and he started studying this in the laboratory. And he produced a small device that could be affected, and it would, you might say, absorb intention. And the device was then charged with an intention. In the famous case he first used was change the pH of water, change this very basic part of water. So they charged up the device. They sent it 2,000 miles to a laboratory in another country, and they set it next to a glass of water. And they were actually able to measure how the water pH changed to quite a significant degree in terms of how pH in water is measured. And I believe, looking at his website yesterday, that this, you can actually go buy one of these devices on his website and possibly recreate this experiment yourself. You'd have to look into it, but that was my impression. So here you have two knowledgeable groups, Tiller and his associates, Robert John at Princeton, and they have brought the notion of what they call the QMP, the quantum measurement problem, into the real world, into the observable world. The QMP basically says that quantum objects behave differently when observed. This is important, not just because it's happening on this very, very small level, but because the whole notion of observations not only disturbing what has to be basically measured, but potentially even producing what we see. This notion, which is in the QMP discussion, violates realism as we understand it, which assumes the world is independent from our observations. So once you say, look, the world isn't independent of your observation, your observation, your quality of life is dependent upon how you perceive your world and how you react to it. And this is where we step off of the scientific side of this and look at how we improve the quality of our lives, how we can use this knowledge to empower ourselves, to improve the way we live on a very basic level. So that's where now you talk about how, you see, and then you go into the discussions of the devices and the history of radionics and many other discussions like meditation and being more consciously aware. So.
Well, a lot of it has to do, I mean, this is really congruent with the New Thought movement, and that has a lot to do with the power of change your thinking, change your life. If you want to heal, change the way you think about whatever it is that your illness is manifesting at that moment, or dis-ease, not put the hyphen there, dis-ease, discomfort, get back into that. There's a lot of this, and going back to your article, I think I need to post that on the blog. I think I have to do that just so people can get an idea. It's also Celeste Adams does an interview with Dr. Tiller called The Conscious Creation of a New Paradigm. You can Google it. Duncan sent me a link for this for Scribd, but the deal is this experiment talks about how important it is for us to be aware that our thoughts, our presence, our energy, the consciousness of who we are has an impact on everything around us. And that's where this, he, you know, refers to it as zero point energy. And it's saying it's here all the time. And somehow we have to be much more aware to be able to engage and in some way, shape or form. And I don't want to say control, but influence. Control is a whole different game, and that's what the plants are saying. The plants are saying, if you're going to make me do a dog and pony show, forget it. But if you're going to invite me to participate, I might want to join in. That's a huge difference, I think, in seeing all of this. Does that make sense?
That's exactly what happened. I don't know if it makes sense, but that's exactly what happened. We could not, we could not ask for better teachers than these plants when it comes to understanding our own motive.
Well, I'm curious as to, does it change the way you deal with the plants in your life, in your house, in your space?
Yeah, I mean, I look at them as really conscious entities, and they, you know, if I'm not taking care of them, then, you know, I'm going to feel it. I will come in and I will know they want water. I will know that they want food. This is something that is more or less ongoing. I have two of the original philodendrons that I bought when we began this process absolutely refused to take place in the experiments. They would just not do it. But I kept them, and they kept growing, and now they've crawled up the entire wall of my studio, and they've branched out along the ceiling, and they completely covered a very large artwork over the refrigerator, and there's just something really spectacular about watching these plants assert themselves in the space, right? And these are the plants that didn't want to do the music. So you tell me.
They had their own agenda. They had their own performance. Okay. This is performance art. Hold on. We're going to take a break. Again, if you're fascinated by this like I am, you can check out Duncan's website, and it's Dragonline Studio, DuncanLaurie.com. You can also get the book, and the book is The Secret Art. This is fascinating, and it's stuff that we are just now really beginning to get into. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we'll play another piece of the music that we're talking about here, that the plants are kind of accompanying. And I think, to me, it's like jazz. They have their own unique interpretation. And, you know, this is the stuff I find fantastically inspiring.
They do interpret. Yeah, they really do.
Okay, so give us a few minutes and we'll be right back talking more plants and music.
Wildfires burn millions of acres each year. And each year, wildland firefighters like Fire Chief James Hall battle to contain them. But they can't do it alone.
A single ember that escapes from a wildfire can travel more than a mile. It can ignite and destroy your home, your community, or more. That single ember can be just as dangerous as the wildfire itself. But you can do something firefighters can't. You can act now to prepare your home and your community for wildfire. You can reduce the risk. Do your part. Go to fireadapted.org.
Get fire adapted. Learn what you can do now to reduce wildfire damage later. At fireadapted.org, a public service message brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council. Learn more at fireadapted.org.
Hey, everybody, this is Josh Groban. After so many years on the stage, one of my favorite things about music is its ability to inspire and nourish the soul. That's why I'm proud to work with Feeding America, an organization that inspires hope for families in need and helps nourish the 16 million kids in this country struggling with hunger. Every year, billions of pounds of excess food go to waste, while one in five children may be left not knowing where their next meal is coming from, or if it's even coming at all. Thankfully, the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food and helps deliver it to kids in need across the country. But they can't do it alone. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Did you know that 7 in 10 girls believe they are not good enough or don't measure up in some way? I'm Amy Poehler. You may know me from film and television, but I'm also involved off-screen, encouraging young girls to be proud of who they are. Body image breakdowns and the pressure to be perfect often causes a girl's self-esteem to plummet. But by being positive role models, we can change that. The number one wish among girls is for their parents to communicate better with them, including more frequent and more open conversations. So get involved and start talking. Begin a conversation with a girl in your life about the importance of self-esteem. Tell her why she is beautiful and set an example by avoiding negative self-talk. You can make a difference in the lives of girls, and that is no laughing matter.
This message was brought to you by American Women in Radio and Television and was made possible through the generous support of the Dove Self-Esteem Fund, working together to raise self-esteem in girls everywhere. To learn more, go to campaignforrealbeauty.com. Thank you for making a difference.
Of Conscious Living, Empower Radio. Hi there, Wendy. My guest, Duncan Laurie, and we're talking radionics. And if you go into the studio here, DuncanLaurie.com, and check out his Dragon Line studio, you can see some of these little the equipment in the background, just some of the things that they were experimenting on in terms of talking about the rocks and the plants and the things they hooked up. What were you hoping to hear from or about when you hooked up rocks?
Oh, rocks are a whole different can of worms.
Okay, should we play the music before we get to rocks? Are rocks not very music friendly?
No, they're great.
A Zydeco.
They love Zydeco. My experience was Zydeco is so happy, it's so positive. There's a lot of interpretation, and the plants in these recordings and in these sessions that we did, they not only were fulfilling the role of an instrument, I consider them really a co-creator of the whole experience. They act as an instrument, they also act as an artist, and they encompass the program that they do with a lot of improvisation. If you listen to these recordings carefully, you see that the music goes in directions that is a little plays off the underlying recording. They interpret it. They're feeling it and reacting to it. And that's just something maybe that can't be scientifically quantified, but if you're familiar with the music and you love music, you can hear when they're going like off the reservation in terms of their response. Mm-hmm.
Or complementing it, you know, doing it with something else that's a completely complementary form that doesn't mimic, but brings this essential element of creative play. And that, I think, you know, how do you quantify creativity? We don't really know how to say what's the difference between the mind, the consciousness that produced something that Van Gogh made versus Cezanne. You know, you just there's no way to put that in a jar. And that's, I think, what the plants are also saying, look, we can do this too.
Yeah, well, I brought this phenomena to some friends that were electronic musicians. And we had a number of groups here that were organized by Steve Nalepa, who came here and we had weekends. You can see some of this on the website. And these musicians were able to take these signals and incorporate them into electronic music composition. Now, why is that important? It's important because in electronic music, you have the individual, the composer, you have the instruments, which is mainly computers and algorithms, and that's it. But the minute you introduce a plant or a rock response to that music, then you have a third creative force. You have something that's completely outside of the domain of the first two, the human experience and the experience of the technology and how they use it. So I found this to be really significant as a creative person. I don't know to what extent this will translate later on into other people's creative experience, but it certainly merits looking at.
This is part of a big, I think, validation for the shamanic realm. People who work with other non-sentient, but what this shows when somebody tells you, okay, this is your rock, sit with your rock for a while, see what impressions you get. And for you to hook a rock up to some kind of electronic sensitivity indicators and get something to come out of it. It's like, wait a second. Is this what the shamanic belief system is about? That there is a consciousness that permeates everything and it's able to make its presence known? Well, okay, so get into the rocks. What was the difference between the plants? Obviously, those were very, very happy plants.
Yeah.
Versus the rocks that you chose.
Well, not every rock produces voltage. The rocks that we were able to use with this equipment produce what's called a petrovoltaic effect. They have a spontaneous emission of voltage that comes from the interior of the rock. And plenty of rocks don't have this at all. But when you find a rock, the volcanic rocks are like this. I'm not talking about piezo effects, which is a different type of electricity, but this is something that is very mysterious. And the research into it is quite fascinating. I won't go into it here, but assume a rock is able to produce in the millivolt range a fluctuating voltage. Every point on the rock is basically a different voltage. And the differential between the two electrodes that are placed on the rock will give you the same response as the plant leaf, because the rock is basically humming along. Mm-hmm. And we found some rocks that were so powerful in this respect that they were producing up to a half a volt of electricity day in and day out. And we charted this over a long period of time. They followed a diurnal cycle. They had peaks and troughs of when they produce voltage having to do with the sun. And the electricity was just constant. So if you hook up your electrodes to that, and then you begin to touch the rocks, you get interrupt that field. And I'm not talking about static electricity here either. Right. You have a completely different phenomena. And we put these rocks in Faraday cages to try to block out any type of external signal contamination and one thing or another. Well, subjectively, listening to the music of the rocks is very different. They're less responsive in some ways, but they're steadier in others. So plants can be very temperamental. They'll go for an hour and then they'll just say, that's enough, and off they go. The plants will will continue. They'll continue producing through thick and thin. And I had one really, really fantastic rock experience here at the studio. At the very end of this work that I was doing, I had shut it all down and I'd built a room on the top floor of my studio here in Rhode Island. And I was working in rock. I was carving rocks. You can see them on the website. These were etchings on the surface of cubes for the most part. And I had the whole room done and I had it all along the periphery of the wall. I had the rocks on display. So I had a big piece of volcanic rock up there with the wires connected to it. And I said, it's just getting to be dusk. This is so beautiful. I'm going to hook it up to the equipment and just see what comes of this. So I hooked the equipment up to the rock and the sun's going down. And the next thing I know, the most beautiful equipment comes out of the most beautiful sounds come out of the rock that I have hooked up. It's like a symphony that's being played for these other rocks in the room. That's exactly the way I took it. And it was beautiful. And the sun was going down and it was sort of a odd experience to have for me, very much towards the end of this experimentation.
See, that to me is fascinating. It was singing the sundown, putting it to bed.
It was a little lullaby. I thought it was a rock to rock communication, that the rocks that was making the music was paying a sort of a compliment to all the rocks in the room that were the result of the sculptural process and all of the experimentation that went on in that room prior to us stopping it all.
So, wow. My husband has the most unusual eyesight, and he says the sunset and sunrise, he picks up all these incredible colors, and I don't see them. I mean, and he's shown me fabric. He says, well, see this little overlay here? There's a red thread, and it's over the white thread. That's why you think it's pink, but this is really crimson. I'm like, oh, my gosh, because when I hold that shade up to it, it definitely splits it apart for me. But he sees those kinds of in light. Those gradient, those degrees of difference. And it sounds like when the rock picked up on that symphony of those extra lights that are present in the sunset, the rock came alive.
Well, there is kind of a spooky feeling that takes place at sunset and sunrise, especially sunset, I find. Mm-hmm. I was feeling all this. I was completely alone. And I'm struggling. I have a phone, but I'm not very good at I'm not very good with phones, and this was an early kind of smartphone, and so I'm trying to record this experience. I'm getting some pictures, I'm getting some video of it, but I'm trying to record it. And I hit talk to text, and the next thing I know, the whole sonic side of it is spewing out text on my phone as well.
Wow,
that was really. Yeah, that was really crazy. So these kind of things happen in this type of experimentation. It's an artistic realm. It's not, there's no way to commercialize it. There's no way to take this and turn it into something somebody can buy. This is something that you have to do and you have to participate in order to really experience how subtle it really is. And that's my basic proof for the thesis of radionics as an instrument, as a type of instrument and a type of technology, that I experienced this as an artist. This was my interest, to make this an artistic experience, sonic experience, music experience. But it goes way beyond that. The technology has many practical applications, and that's what really what the book covers.
Okay. Well, so for the novice, what application to begin with would the technology provide?
Well, it was developed as a healing technology. This is a form of alternative healing. When you use, if you assume, I think through time, remember, radionics began at the dawn of the application of electricity to instrumentation in the early 1900s. And it was still considered very magical. Electricity was doing things that people just couldn't have dreamed of 50 years before. It was turning on lights. It was communicating across vast spaces. It was running big, powerful machines. This thing could do anything. Electricity. So the thought that you could incorporate electricity into a device that would diagnose and treat disease didn't seem too far-fetched. And the first inventor, the real inventor of radionics was a man named Albert Abrams. And he just used the sensitivity on the body over the specific organs of the body to measure. He developed instruments that just measured resistance between two points. And based on his understanding of the resistance on the surface of the body, he was able to generate a system for diagnosing disease. Mm-hmm. And he was a very, very famous individual in his day for doing things just like this. He was an accredited medical physician with a brilliant career. So this wasn't considered far-fetched. And it was still within the realm of the science of the day. Gradually, it changed. It became less scientific, more intuitive. And that's what I cover in the book. It's how all this developed and where it went. But if you're a person who is ill and you believe that your illness is due to an imbalance in your body of some kind, physiological imbalance, an emotional imbalance. If you believe that the body is capable of healing itself, then all you really need to do is trigger or send an intent or a signal to your body to restore balance in a certain way. And this is what modern radionics is based on. It's a calibration system that allows the operator to find what is wrong in a symbolic sense, this using the symbols on the instrument or the computer, and then invert it or to send another signal to remove the impediment, to rebalance the system. And once that impediment is confronted and removed, then the body's self-healing capacity kicks in and the chemicals are generated in the spine and the nervous system and sent to where they have to be sent to, and the body recovers. And this is what we experience in spontaneous remission of disease, which nobody can understand. How does a person who's deathly ill suddenly get better and become healed? Well, something must be going on in the body that triggered that response. So the radionic practitioners of today, and whatever else they call themselves, are looking to optimize this capacity of the body to bring a healing force into itself. That's really the gist of it.
So a lot of this has, it's so subtle. It's still in the realm of we can't define what's happening unless we have a visible result. And when you're talking about how successful he was, it isn't applied at a wider level. What happened? Why is this still such an esoteric and, you know, above and beyond the reach of the mainstream process? Because it's fantastic. It should have, in my opinion, it should have advanced further than it has by now.
Well, I think you have to look at science, as we understand it today, is by definition looking for repetitive experimentation. And if I do it in my laboratory, you have to be able to do it in yours. It has to be meet peer review. It has to be very, very carefully analyzed and the methodology.
Approved.
There's so many places that, you know, mistakes can be made and flaws can be detected either intentionally or unintentionally. What we're talking about here is the manipulation of consciousness. I mean, what is there about consciousness in the study of consciousness that meets the standard of science? You see, you're talking about studying consciousness with tools that are deriving their value and their efficiency from consciousness itself. You see, it's completely incompatible with scientific procedure as generally understood.
Yeah.
And the minute you try to extract that out, the minute you try to make the plant do something in order to prove it to somebody else, then you're in a different world of understanding. You're in a much more mental, intellectual framework and not in the joyful and intuitive world that much of this, many of these effects need to take place. I mean, there's hope is registered. Take placebos, right? Today, pharmaceutical companies are at their wit's end to develop remedies that can beat the placebo effect. What is the placebo effect? They don't even know. They're studying it tremendously, because if you would take a sample group of people and you give half of them placebos and half of them your medicine, and the placebo effect cures a whole bunch of them, even potentially more than what the medicine does,
right,
then you're assuming that the intent to heal via the pill, it was enough to trigger the body to produce a result, you see?
Yeah.
So How do you study that? And yet we know placebos will cure 30% of the people that take them or improve them or whatever. And these are statistical studies that are ongoing now in places like Harvard. So when you look at that and you say, well, the placebo, if I just take a feather and I wave it over your head and I say, I now am investing you with the healing energy of the universe, and suddenly a person gets better, then what they believe is that the feather and your statement and their confidence they have in you gets is now improving their well-being, and their well-being gets improved. Mm-hmm. You see, and you can't really quantify that. And it's something that requires a lot better methodology than what we have today, if in order to truly appreciate and understand. So that's all I have to say about it. I mean, the point is you can get these instruments, you can learn these skills, whether you apply it one way or another way, it doesn't really matter. All the radionics inventors invented their own equipment. They invented their own methodologies. Some didn't use electricity. Some used just diagrams, two-dimensional diagrams. Some did all kinds of stuff. What was important is they developed a feedback loop with what they were doing and gained confidence in their methodology. And with added confidence came better results.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, the real pitch here.
Well, it's like each person has their own code, and it may take a lifetime, it may take 5 minutes, but once you connect and figure out what your code is, you become powerful and limitless in your ability to reframe and reformat your environment in a way that you are intentionally manifesting results or inviting results. And I think with your work with the plants, what you're saying is there are things around us that can also engage and interact if we can allow that is possible. Your book and your website, I think it's just worth mentioning before we get out of here. One more time, the best way to connect with you or find out more about what you're doing.
Yes, it's through the website, duncanlaurie.com. If anyone's interested, or just take it from there.
Well, that's pretty
succinct.
Best
to go do your own research.
Just take it from there.
You have to go do your own research. Don't take anything from me at face value. Go find out for yourself.
Well, that's, and your art is so fun, too. You know, that's at least look, you know, take a look at the art, because that's where you're engaging with this other unseen element, this other energy. And with the instrumental biocommunication panel, the way that people are trying to figure out how these little, I don't know what you call them, the utensils, utilities, tools, instruments,
sure,
whatever. That's where I think we're going, exploring and learning and ruling out what doesn't work to find out what does. Just be a conscious creator. And Duncan, I appreciate your time. I know this is, you know, this is still in so many ways completely uncharted territory. And I hope you will keep teaching and sharing and in some way, shape, or form, giving people a platform to discover their own abilities with this, because this is fantastic. And playing with the plants, too.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me on and for letting your readers know a little bit more about this. Like I say, there's a lot of this going on. The book has guidelines as to what it's all about and how it can be used creatively in one's own experience. So let's just hope that thanks to you, the word spreads.
I'm going to put another blog post. We did another interview with Wendy's Coffee House, and with Duncan's links are on that site too. But Wendy's Coffee House, I'll add some more links with the things that we talked about today. Because again, this is still uncharted territory, and we are learning and exploring and evolving as we go. So if you're listening, just stay curious and check out some of these things, and then, you know, I don't know if you can hook up your own plant, but trust me, they're listening to you, okay? Whether they're hooked up or not, they're listening. And if they need water,
well, you can find
take
other
care
ways.
Of it.
You can
take
find
care
other
of
ways.
It. And good luck with your refrigerator, Duncan. I hope your plants don't just completely cover it up and lock you out.
That's all right.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Really nice talking to you. Take care.
Thank you. And thank you for listening. It's Conscious Living on Empower Radio. Again, I did an interview earlier with Duncan, a little bit different information that we had with Wendy's Coffee House, and that was the interview on KCMO. But these things are so fantastic for me. That nightlight and the energy that connects with me through the nightlight reminds me this space around us that looks like it's empty is incredibly full and vibrant. And that rock, when he said it, play the little symphony, the serenade as the sun set, is an indication that other energies around us have the ability to connect and inspire us to be more than what we are. So thank you for listening. I appreciate your time. Check out some of the archives. If you have a chance, the show airs here on Empower Radio every night, 9 o'clock Central. So take care wherever you are, stay curious, and explore your own abilities, your own world, your own mind. There's a whole lot more than what we've figured out at this moment.